Dr. Norman Swan, the journalist, broadcaster, physician and host of Radio National's Health Report, often finds himself immersed in medical journals and research papers. So what kind of prose does he turn to when he's not on the clock? Dr. Swan is my guest today on Summer Reading. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Mel.
So what books are you reading right now?
Well, I'll colour this by the fact that I'm trying to write a book at the moment.
You're juggling reading and writing at the same time.
Is actually trying to do that. So fiction is my outlet when I just can't stand another scientific paper. So I'm reading Orhan Pamuk's book, My Name is Red. Orhan Pamuk is a Turkish Nobel laureate, probably better known for Museum of Innocence, but also, you know, I think My Name is Red came before Museum of Innocence. And it's a sort of lyrical, allegorical book based around Islamic art and artists and the encroachment of the West. And it's also a murder mystery. It's quite a remarkable book. It takes you a while to get into it. It's a big book, but quite extraordinary.
Sounds like quite the task to weave those together. What about your to-read list? Are you going to get a chance to get through a few more books over the summer break?
With the fact that I've got to deliver this, sorry to be so prosaic, deliver this book by the end of January, I'll probably be good to get through one. And I'm looking forward, and it's highly recommended, to reading Question 7 by Richard Flanagan. That's the book I'd like in my Christmas stocking or my Hanukkah stocking. And again, it's part fiction, part memoir, partly allegorical. In fact, you know, there are quite a few similarities, I think, between Richard Flanagan and Orhan Pamuk, in terms of the way they write, the way they reflect the society and community in which they live and grow up. I mean, Museum of Innocence is about, which I strongly recommend to people, is really about, you know, Istanbul in the 50s and changing life in Turkey and relationships and so on. And in fact, if anybody's visiting Istanbul, he's actually created a building, a museum, which is a reflection of the novel. And the museum is called the Museum of Innocence. It's a real museum, but it's fictional content. It's fantastic.
That's fantastic. It sounds like that would resonate with the Richard Flanagan book too as well.
Yes.
Are you a Richard Flanagan fan? Have you read much of his back catalogue?
Yeah, I've read a few, and I always find him pointed, elegant in his prose. And, you know, and he's passionate as well. And you might not always agree with his passions, but you can't fault him for being passionate.
You mentioned that you're reading a lot of scientific papers at the moment, and I'm sure you do that all throughout the year, even when you're not writing a book. How do you go balancing reading for work and reading for pleasure?
Oh, God. You probably come across this as well. I've got friends, and you probably do too, who, you know, you sit down at dinner and they read The New Yorker, they read The Economist, they read all the newspapers, and they have this busy job. And how the bloody hell are they doing this? And so on. So my weekly reading is, you know, I will read The New Yorker. I will get up in the morning, probably like you, I'll read The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Financial Times, as well as the local papers. And even though I'm not doing Radio National Breakfast, I feel as if I've got to be across that. That kind of news and current affairs consumes you. And then you've really got to read, you've got to have some fiction on the go as a relief there. But I also really, I never did history at school and I regret it. So I'm kind of an autodidact with history. So I do read a fair bit of history when I come to nonfiction, but at the moment, fiction is my release.
I know exactly what you mean. I feel the same. I spend so much time reading news stories between being across everything in federal politics and then wanting to keep across, you know, other national and international news.
Yeah, and you're terrified you'll miss something, you know.
Very much so. And then I'm delving into what's the latest report on the energy market or what's the detail of this policy the federal government's considering. I often find by the time I get into bed at the end of the night, if I pick up a book, it's sort of my brain signal that, oh, we can stop now. It's time to fall asleep. So I find
at some point you're going to have to, if I can offer you some superficial psychotherapy.
Please
here, Mel,
do.
You've got to say, the world will not end if I don't read this. Yeah. And, you know, I'm better actually improving my brain in some shape or sense. You know, exercising a different part of your brain.
I definitely need to work on that. But look, the summer holidays for me are a really good chance to plow through books and be able to switch off that sort of relentless search of information, I guess, that work turns my mind to. I haven't, though, gone through the process of writing a book. As an author, do you ever have your author's mind on when you're reading a book? Do you ever read a book and think, oh, I can see how the author's trying to structure this or move through that? Or are you able to switch off and just enjoy it as a consumer and as a reader?
I find if I start to think like that, there's a problem with the book. It's like watching a movie and you're starting to look at the acting of the, you know, the acting skills, how they're acting. If you're actually thinking about that, there's something wrong with either the movie or the book. Mm. The book, particularly a piece of fiction, should be immersive. You know, if you want to go back and analyze it, you probably need to reread it and read it again rather than just losing. Because part of the joy is just losing yourself in the story, in the narrative. And then you can come back and work out why they did it. But as soon as I start to get analytical, I think, wow, there's a problem with this book. They're either trying to be too smart, you know, too fancy with their writing, and the same goes for films. You know, it's storytelling, and you just got to do it really well and sparingly. And good writing is spare, very spare.
Certainly, journalism teaches us that too. Look, before I let you go, you've obviously given us some good recommendations with your own reading list, but are there any other books that if we've got a listener who's searching for something to add to their summer reading pile that you think would be a great addition to their to-read list?
Well, I can't help but recommend Anthony Beaver's book on the Russian Civil War, which came out a few years ago. And unfortunately, I think Anthony Beaver's not that well at the moment, certainly into his 90s. But Geraldine Dugan and I actually interviewed him together for one of the Radio National Book Weekends. And that book on the Russian Civil War really helps you understand Russia today. It's an extraordinary book, and as are all Anthony Beaver's books. And interestingly, coming away from non-fiction to non-fiction, one of the things that he said in that interview with Geraldine and I a few years ago, probably about 3 years ago, was that when they write the history books in 2100 and look back at the 21st century, they will say that 2022 was the key year of the 21st century, which was, of course, the year that Russia invaded Ukraine and all things changed. So I strongly recommend that book.
Well, I was hoping to reduce my to-read pile that's on my bedside table this summer, but now I'm going to have to add that book to it. Thank you, Norman Swan, for giving me yet more books I need to read over summer. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mel. Have a happy Christmas.